The record today is Monday, February 15th, 2010. This is the Alaska State Senate Resources Committee. For the record, we have with us Senator Huggins, Senator Stedman, Senator Wagner, Senator French, and myself, Wilikowski. Senator McGuire is excused, or Co-Chair McGuire. Today we turn our attention back to Senate Bill 220, the Alaska Sustainable Energy Act. Since we last discussed this bill, committee staff have been working with members of the administration to address issues related to the bill implementation. The CS before us is a product of those discussions. I want to thank the members of the administration for their willingness to work so intensively with our staff. Many issues have been resolved. Some no doubt remain. We have a CS before us, / version K. Does everyone have a copy of that?
Chairman, I move we adopt the CS.
Thank you. Yes, that is. Is there an objection to that? Okay, seeing none, / version K is adopted. We'll be hearing from Michael Pawlowski of Senator McGuire's staff and Michelle Seideman from my staff. They'll walk us through each section of the bill, briefly explain its purpose, and then we'll ask for agency comment on particular sections. We'll follow that with a committee discussion. Where agencies note concerns with the section, I ask that they attempt to provide alternative language, even in conceptual form, that would resolve those concerns. Because the bill is lengthy, I would appreciate everyone being concise in their remarks. And we'll have a number of people here to address the various sections in the bill. And with that, I would like to turn it over to Michelle Seideman. Please put yourself on the record.
Hi, for the record, my name is Michelle Seideman. I'm staff to Co-Chair Wilikowski. Members of the committee, I'll walk through, along with my colleague Mike Pawlowski, each section of the bill. As the chairman said, after we speak and give a little reintroduction to the section, we will be asking members of the administration to come up and give comments specific to that section. This bill has 25 sections, roughly, so we thought it was a better way to do it that way, step by step, than holding all administration comments to the end. So I'll begin with Section 1, which is simply the short title of the bill, and of course there has been no change to that. It remains the Alaska Sustainable Energy Act. Section 2 is where we see our first change. If you have your K version of the bill, you'll see in Section 2 it says legislative policy, and there's a fairly lengthy policy section there that follows. As you might recall from our initial overview on this bill, this section was largely developed by a stakeholder group that the House Energy Committee pulled together, represented diverse interests, and they spent, I would think they probably met 4 to 5 times to develop an energy policy statement for the state of Alaska. So that's what you see here. Initially, we had that policy statement towards the middle or end of the bill. It was going to be in statute. We had a meeting facilitated by the governor's legislative director in which several representatives of the Department of Law cautioned us that putting such a policy statement in statute could have unintended effects. We could, many of the statements in there are what I would call aspirational goals, and the lawyers in the Department of Law said that we could be held to some of those goals and that that might land the state in a position of being sued if for some reason we didn't meet those aspirational goals. We do have behind us today, I've noticed, Mike Ford with the Department of Law. He can answer any of your specific questions about that. But in an effort to address those concerns, we simply pulled that section of the bill into the front of the bill. It's now uncodified law, which I guess is essentially an intent language. So unless you have anything to add, Mike, that would be what I would say about Section 2.
Did you have a question, Senator Stedman?
Yeah, but I would before we move to the next section.
Okay. Mike, do you want to put yourself on the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, this is Mike Pawlowski for Senator McGuire's office. The important previous Section 2 items are on page 2, lines 5 and 6. And page 2, line 21, these were the STEP goals for energy efficiency, 10% and 15% that you see on page 2, lines 5 and 6. And then page 2, line 21 to 22 was the goal of 50% renewable energy. Those were originally included as distinct items but have been rolled into the policy section of the bill.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Stedman.
We're just on this on line five, Mr. Chairman. I'm just kind of concerned that as we go through this intent of setting up this policy, that we can substantiate how to get to 10% and how to get to 15%, and these aren't just feel-good numbers, because 50% is too high and zero is too low. And so I assume that there's been some extensive analysis done on this.
Senator Stedman, through the chair, we did look at what other states had been able to achieve. Many other states have set goals, some many years ago, so we were able to look at what they were able to achieve. We'll also be referencing a pilot project later in this meeting, just carried out by the Anchorage School District, where they set some goals for themselves, and I don't have the exact percentage reductions, but they've seen significant reductions both in gas use and electrical use. So both on our side and in House Energy, where they also did some analysis, we both felt at the staff level that these were goals that were achievable during this time frame. And we'd be happy to go back and share some of the research we looked at with you.
Mr. Chairman, if good, because I do get concerned that we don't just pick numbers out of the sky.
Fair.
Because I would imagine as we go forward, our energy consumption is going to increase, and hopefully our efficiency is going to increase.
Fair point, Senator Stedman. Can we, for the next hearing, get some documentation on how we came up with that number and forwarded that to the committee for their review. Did you have something, Mr. Pulaski?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, if I might. Senator Stedman, through the chair, this was a dialogue with the Department of Transportation, Public Facilities, and other agencies, and I think it's important to note another addition is on page 2, line 6, that we established 2010 as a baseline because they expressed similar concerns to what you've expressed, as in how do you measure from your goal zero to your end goal? And so that was included specifically to get to that point.
Further clarification, Senator Stedman, through the chair. I think you'll notice on page 2, line 6 and 7, we, in the energy efficiency goal, we do refer to the fact that we will need to account for growth in population and economy. So there's no desire to see overall energy consumption reduced 10% from current levels. We need to recognize that there will be growth and allow for that growth, and nonetheless make every effort to be as efficient as possible.
All right, thank you. Other questions on this section? Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just, Michelle, one piece that I guess, as I recall, renewable energy federally, it doesn't recognize hydro. Is that correct, or something?
Senator Huggins, through the chair, I believe that is the current state of affairs.
And the other one that we had a small conversation about once upon a time is nuclear. And not that we're going to build any nuclear plants tomorrow, but why we wouldn't put that in here so at a future date it wouldn't be precluded or somebody have to come back and change it. But, I mean, it's just a conversation I would recommend we have.
Thank you. And just to clarify on the hydro, this body did pass a resolution urging Congress to change to include hydro as a renewable resource, and we have been having discussions on nuclear energy, and we will continue to have those discussions as the bill moves along. Other questions on this section? Okay, seeing none. Yes, Senator Stedman.
I assume we're on section still on section 2.
Yes.
I'm not sure what on line 29, page 2, creating and maintaining a state fiscal regime that encourages private sector development of the state's energy resources. I'm not quite sure what that means, creating and maintaining a state's fiscal regime.
Senator Stedman, through the chair, this is Michelle Seideman again. This is language that I believe we drew directly from the stakeholder group, and we could go back and seek additional clarification from that group. I agree that it's a fairly broad statement subject to much interpretation.
Other questions? All right, thank you. Next section.
This section, section 3, there were no substantive changes from the earlier version, as is the case with section 4, Senator Wilikowski. That doesn't mean that, of course, we shouldn't stop for committee discussion if there is any.
You don't see a hand raised, keep going.
Okay. There may also be agency people that want to speak to some of these sections. I think I recall in Section 4, there may be comments from AHFC. So before we leave that section, Brian Butcher may be behind.
Come on up, and can we pull a chair so that we don't have to keep shuffling around? Welcome to the committee, Brian. If you could put yourself on the record and tell us your comments about Section 4.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Brian Butcher, Director of Governmental Relations and Public Affairs for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. The only comment I wanted to make to Section 4 is that in the state energy program stimulus funds, the $28 million that we received last summer, $4 million was earmarked for the corporation to work on the development of developing our ACWARM software that's currently used to do ratings for residential homes, to expand it to commercial, as well as work to begin educating and working with various communities, not just in educating them on the issues of energy efficiency, but also with the expansion to commercial. So this is something that we're already just beginning to undergo. The U.S. Department of Energy approved the state plan about 3 weeks ago, so we're just now starting to kind of ramp up to do that.
Questions on that? Brian, just briefly, you see this working with municipalities and corporations to help make those buildings more energy efficient?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. As we've worked on, and as you're all aware, the legislature appropriated $360 million to the corporation for residential weatherization and the home energy rebate program. At the time, we were all aware, certainly, that increasing the energy efficiency of residential homes in all areas of the state is a positive thing, but when you've got schools and other government buildings and commercial buildings still using a tremendous amount of energy, it still is, in particular in rural Alaska, at the crisis level and something that needs to be worked towards. So that's something that we're excited about moving forward with.
Great. Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Butcher. Okay, Section 5.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, this is Mike with Senator McGuire's office again. Section 5, the old Section 5 you will find in the C version has been replaced, was deleted, the Energy Efficiency Grant Fund section. The new Section 5 is what was the old Section 6 in the C version, and that is the Alternative Energy for Public Works provision. Working with the Department of Transportation, we made changes to the section, particularly the idea that the department had to predict which energy sources will become available. That has been removed and is pretty much limited to the design process, that you will consider alternative energy sources in the design phase of a building. Further, a definition of construction was added on page 4, line 12 and 13, so that when a capital project, say a retrofit, reconstruction, alteration of a building is done, that the requirement envisioned by this section isn't automatically triggered under this section. We have the Department of Transportation here to speak to the changes as well.
I believe we have Mr. St. Alban online. Are you there, Joel? Joel St. Alban, are you online?
Hi, this is Joel St. Alban with Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Do you have comments regarding Section 5, Joel?
As it is currently written, I do not have any comments. Our concerns were addressed, and as it is fine.
Okay. Senator French has a comment or question.
Thanks. Just a quick question for you, Mr. St. Alban. You're comfortable with the language shall consider, and I guess my question is how meaningful is that? What does that mean in real life when you shall consider something? Is it a, you know, a passing consideration, a day's worth of consideration? How much consideration is involved there?
We will take it into consideration when we are designing a facility. as to what's currently on the market as far as non-fossil fuel. I think it's more than a passing, especially if it's adopted into statute.
And what's the final decision-making point for you on that consideration? When do you sort of push a decision towards an alternative energy system, and when do you rely on fossil fuels?
I think that is well outlined on page 4, lines 3 through 6, that when the cost is, you know, not more than a fossil fuel-fired system to over the life cycle of the equipment, you know, to purchase, install, maintain, and operate, would be the key to that, to in the answering of that question.
Thank you.
Other questions? Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you very much. Bill, it looks to me like if you take line 3 and going through line 6, that if you actually operationalize those two elements, then you almost wouldn't use anything other than fossil fuel. Because as I understand it, the systems cost more, and when you look at the measurable effect, then you have a pretty tough challenge.
You have a comment on that, Mr. Joel?
I have no comment to offer on that.
Well, excuse me. I'll ask it one more time. Can you, in fact, do anything if you put into effect those two elements, A and B?
Joel?
I'm thinking your question through, sir.
Understand. But very simply put, as I understand it, generally speaking, systems that have been around for a long time, fossil fuel systems, are relatively inexpensive compared to some of their counterparts, which are new, number one. And number two, that the measurable adverse effect piece of it is kind of hard to put a new system into effect, but help me out.
The adverse environment. I would say I'm probably having a difficult time answering your question. In that, I would say 100% of what we put in currently are fossil fuel fired systems. So I don't have a lot of knowledge on, you know, firsthand knowledge on non fossil fuel systems. To as far as their life cycle cost, as far as less measurable of adverse effect on the environment, and I think that's the overall goal of the non-fossil fuel-fired systems.
Fish.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Huggins, through the chair, I felt it was important to clarify that the issue was life cycle costs, that as they're considering it, is important that they include the entire life cycle of the investment in that decision.
Other questions? Okay, Section 6.
Hi, this is Michelle Seideman again. Section 6 started out with a requirement that DOT establish through regulation a purchasing preference for energy-efficient appliances, equipment, and vehicles. After discussion with both the Departments of Transportation and Department of Administration, we have pulled that back somewhat to a requirement that when the Department of Administration enters into contracts to purchase equipment that use energy, it shall give substantial consideration to the energy efficiency of the equipment. There were several problems that the departments pointed out to the original language we had in the bill. One is that we referred to Energy Star appliances, which primarily are used in households rather than in commercial settings or business settings such as State of Alaska offices. Another is that much of the information that's available about appliances, not all of it is credible. A lot of it's promotional material provided by the makers of those appliances. So they really wanted some caveat in there that we would only be using credible and objective information. A third issue was that there are approximately 7 to 9 purchasing preferences currently in state statute. The Department of Administration was opposed to including a new preference in there because their purchasing apparently is very complicated already. It becomes mind-boggling to manage all of these different preferences. We have Vern Jones, who's the chief procurement officer for the state, in the audience, and I think he can speak to that more eloquently than I can. But after discussion with the Department of Administration, we decided simply to say that they shall give substantial consideration to the purchase of energy-efficient appliances. That seemed like the best we could reasonably include in statute. And I would suggest that Vern can speak more articulately than I can to this issue.
Jones. Welcome to the committee. Put yourself on the record and give us your comments on Section 6.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Vern Jones. I'm the state's chief procurement officer, and I also oversee the Division of General Services in the Department of Administration. Michelle is correct about the change and the issues we had with the previous version. As far as the current version you have before you, I think we understand what you're attempting to do here. I do have one issue with the current language. The immediate prior version said that when we purchase equipment that uses energy, we shall give consideration to energy efficiency. This version adds the word substantial. We shall give substantial consideration to the energy efficiency of the equipment when there's credible objective information at hand. Again, I understand what the intent is, but including the word substantial, I think, makes the section a little bit more unclear. I would say substantial compared to what? Compared to cost or estimated lifespan or functionality. I'm not sure how we would implement that. I do know how we would consider energy efficiency, but it's not really a defined term we use in procurement. So I would suggest that we strike the word substantial. I think we would have no issue at that point.
All right, any questions? Comments? No. Thank you for your testimony. Any comments on substantial?
Of course, we as staff would defer to the will of the committee there. I think I can understand the concerns raised by Mr. Jones and note that he has something like 20 years of experience in purchasing with the state. I mean, there's a clash here going on a little bit because, of course, we want as much consideration as possible, but he makes a good point about functionality and how long a piece of equipment will last, and all of those things are important considerations.
Thank you. And next, Section 7.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Mike for Senator McGuire's office. The change to Section 7, which used to be Section 8, regards the Renewable Energy Grant Fund, and the substantive change from the C version is the deletion of the idea that the Energy Authority should verify matching funds. I believe we have Sarah Fisher Goad in the audience, and after the conversation with the department, or with the authority, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, the ability to verify matching funds presented some problems for them. But sticking with the principle of the section that we wanted to see projects that had a financial benefit to the state greater than the amount of the grant funds received go forward. Adding in that criteria, the sponsors felt was important.
Sarah, did you have any comments on this section? Please put yourself on the record. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Sarah Fisher Goad, Deputy Director of Operations for the Alaska Energy Authority. Yes, we appreciate the change that the committee staff made on this. Our concern with verifying match at the time of application is it's not easy to do that at the time of application. Sometimes there is federal grant funds pending, state funds, or other funds pending the application. We do definitely verify the match requirements at the time of the grant, and so we felt it best to have that removed, but understand that we are providing significant weight for match as the statute requires.
Questions? Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on in and around line 26, Page four. It refers to the average cost of energy for each resident. I'm not sure that we shouldn't have some language in there that refers to a BTU equivalency, because it's pretty hard to compare, you know, the cost of natural gas in Anchorage to hydro in Southeast to oil out West. And then you get into the mix where most homes, at least outside of Anchorage, I think, metropolitan area, are heated with diesel fuel. So I'm not quite sure what that says. And I know this language is left over from the, it's not fresh language, but I think it needs to be addressed on the line 29, 30, and 31. I would hope that the financial benefit when we do the renewable energy grants exceed the cost of the grant funds. Otherwise, it wouldn't make much sense to do grants if we don't have any net benefit at the end. I know there is some concern that that's not the case, and a few of them were. So.
Any comments?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I can certainly get some additional information for the committee with respect to the determination of the high cost areas, as we do have the evaluation criteria that does list there. I did not bring it with me, but there is a criteria on the high cost areas. With respect to the addition that's added on lines 29 through 31, we do have a benefit cost review that we consider significant now through our evaluation process. For around three applications, it was 16% of the evaluation. The one issue I'd like to point out on this is we're not always talking about construction projects where you can clearly evaluate a benefit cost. A study may perhaps have a public benefit, not necessarily a financial benefit. So we do also evaluate other benefits for a proposed project and application.
Yes, Senator Stemmen.
Just an additional comment on that. The incremental cost, it appears that from at least some of the numerics that I've seen of the current projects moving forward in Southeast dealing with hydro, the cost per kilowatt at maybe 21, 22, 23 cents, which is substantially higher than the current hydros that were built several years ago. But that's not too far different than what Fairbanks is faced with now. I think they're around 23 cents a kilowatt. So I think when we get into this average cost issue, in some areas of the state where you have to do your next increment for your energy generation, you can't really go back and look at the average cost currently in the community. It's the average cost going forward to build out this and satisfy your energy needs. So it's a little more complex than just looking around to see where the highest rate in the state is.
Any comments?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I would have to agree that this has been a very difficult program to have these evaluation criteria. Our statutory guidance is to give most weight to high cost areas, significant weight without defining significant for regional spreading, for match requirements, and then also now the benefit cost. So we've established regulations that I think take the statute to a systematic method to evaluate projects. But I agree that this is there's a lot of moving parts and pieces to evaluate these projects. So I definitely, it's certainly worth additional discussions with respect to are there other changes that the legislature or this committee would like to see.
Yeah, and this is a challenging area. This is a tough one to resolve, because we do have residents in rural Alaska who are paying outrageous rates. But at the same time, we have people in the Rail Belt, where 78% of the population are, who are also concerned about their rates. So it's a challenge to try to figure out ways that we can incentivize renewable energy all throughout Alaska. And happy to work with the members on the committee and the administration to try to figure out how we can appropriately balance that. Other questions, comments? Yes, Senator Stedman.
I think this points to, Mr. Chairman, if I could, I think this points to a direction that leads me to have a little bit of discomfort in that the further we move off of our hydro generation or natural gas-fired turbines or proven windmill technology to into the realm of it might work, and or there's some one particular spot on the planet that this one little venture is working, makes me a little uncomfortable. And I have always been of the belief when we go down this road trying to deal with the energy issues in Western Alaska and Southeast and in the Rail Belt, we concentrate on proven technology because it's a one-shot deal. We can't afford to have upside-down projects. And I know there's some area of, or there's some movement afoot to lead us into more on the edge of newer technology and unproven technology, and quite frankly, it doesn't make me very comfortable.
And I'll just say we do have a separate section. This is the renewable energy grant section. We do have a separate section on it, creating an emerging energy technology fund for doing exactly the things that you're talking about, the really innovative things that we're doing in Alaska, such as in-river turbines and some of the other geothermal projects, for instance, where Alaska really can be a leader. So we do have separate sections to try to address sort of both of those concerns.
All right, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
If I could.
Please.
Again, when we set this energy fund up a couple years ago, we were trying to respond to the high oil price and respond to it very quickly. It was well over $100 a barrel, and respond to it quickly to try to get our homes around the state onto other energy sources and get their costs down. But the more we deviate from this proven old boring technology to the feel-good forefront of energy generation, the more upside-down projects we're going to have. And we have trouble meeting some of these criterias, which I think are good, where a project has to show a financial benefit. Because there's enough good projects, we don't have to go out and roll the dice.
Other questions, comments? Thank you. Yes, Senator French.
Maybe I could just have Senator Sedman explain. I guess I'm missing the point here about what it is that's pointing us away from those proven technologies. This language is for projects that are likely to have a financial benefit that exceeds the amount of grant funds received. Are you saying that should be stricken to say that must have a financial benefit that exceeds the amount of grant funds received, or what?
No,
I'm just curious.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please.
I think maybe I wasn't as clear as I should be. I think the language, I'm fine with the language directing the renewable energy target, to the financial benefit arena. What I'm concerned about is the movement by some groups away from this. And, well, I see it in the list of projects. There's a tendency of drift and the applicants coming in for those projects. I've had several of them come in my office. And just doesn't make me very comfortable. When there's a big pot of money laying out there, there's all kinds of folks that show up to with good ideas. And I think the more cautious we are in this arena, the better off we are. And we'll deal with the other section, I guess, when we get to it.
Thank you.
Yes, yes, please, Sarah. Did you have a comment?
Through the chair, Senator Sedman, the regulations that were adopted that further guide the Renewable Energy Fund recommendation program do require that a project have reasonable technical environmental risk and that the proposed energy system can reliably produce and deliver the energy as planned or proposed in an application. And I would be happy, we will be providing some additional information to the legislature with respect to the round three grant recommendations. I think later this week, I think beginning of next week, we'll have some additional information for the committee, and I'd be happy to sit down with Senator Sedman to discuss the projects that are considered questionable or may not meet the technical requirements.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree. I don't think any of us wants projects going forward that aren't cost-effective, don't meet the cost-benefit analysis. Yes, Senator French.
If we're making a list, Mr. Chairman, maybe we could also see a list of the projects that have been approved under this section, just so I can, you know, kind of get a grip on what we've done so far. Just, you know, because it's still fairly new, right? I mean, this has only been around for a couple of years, so I'd be fascinated to see where we spent the money up to date. Thank you.
Senator Wagner.
Yeah, I'll add, this goes along with Senator Stedman with some of the things he said. I think we need to be very careful about how far we do go until we get an opportunity to start matching up some of these renewable projects that we want to do. Because number one, on the rail belt, for instance, we only need so many megawatts of energy. So I don't think we need, you know, I made this statement earlier, I think. We got too many rabbit trails to run down. I think we need to concentrate our efforts, and I don't mind concentrating them on renewable resources if renewable resources work, and if in the long run we can see that they will be economically feasible. But we don't want 14 of them out there when three of them would do the job that Alaska needs, and then we need to evaluate those, find out the ones that would do the job the best. So.
Any guidance that members have on adjusting the language so that we get to where we are? I think we're all headed would be much appreciated. Okay, Section 8.
Mr. Chairman, this is Mike Pulowski for Senator McGuire's office. Section 8 is complementary language to Section 7. The change from the previous Section 9 in the C version is the deletion of the specific reference to the word economist. And this is for the technical analysis and independent economic and financial analysis of the Renewable Energy Fund grant projects to fulfill the intent in Section 7.
And is this section designed to sort of fix the problem that we were all just discussing?
Senator Wilikowski, Mr. Chairman, it is.
Thank you. Okay, any questions? Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, I was just a little bit ahead of us here. If we go to page 6, lines 16 and 17, where it lays out two different organizations that the authority can contract with. And I guess it makes me a little nervous. They may be the perfect organizations, but just for us to just designate two and say these are the right ones. When earlier, when we were just talking about it, says we enter into a contract, and it doesn't limit us. So I guess I would think about where we want to limit ourselves and where we want to be wide open. And I would rather have alternatives rather than in statute limiting what we can do.
Fair point. Any other questions on Section 8? Okay, Section 9.
Okay, this is Michelle and Senator Wilikowski's office. The new Section 9 is the same as the old Section 10 with the following changes. This section, by the way, has to do with a requirement that AEA work with communities around the state to establish a statewide fuel buying cooperative. And of course, the objective there is to enable communities to buy fuel at a lower price than they're currently buying at when they're each, in fact, in many cases, we have different entities within each community all buying fuel separately, and they don't achieve economies of scale and probably pay more than they need to. So what the new language does is clarifies that we're asking AEA to facilitate the organization of such a cooperative, not to run the organization or necessarily to be even a part of it. The other thing you might notice in there, we have a list of entities that we think might be interested in joining such a co-op. During the summer, by the way, when the committee traveled to communities around the state, this was one of the things we heard in communities. Please help us get together with other communities and buy fuel together. So we've listed here some of the entities that might wish to be part of such a cooperative, and the list includes local governments, utilities, school districts, tribal governments, state agencies, housing authorities, and other interested nonprofit entities. One thing we might want to look at further is whether a village store or other for-profit entity could participate in the co-op. My understanding is that Article 9, Section 6 of the Constitution might place some limits if there is credit that's being extended by a public authority like a local government, it might make it impossible for for-profit entities to participate in a fuel buying co-op. But otherwise, the main intention here is to ask AEA to go out to contact interested parties to provide technical assistance to them and help in the organization of such a cooperative.
Senator Stedman.
Mr. Chairman, on line 19.
Page
5. I'm not interested in the ending language where it says, and other interested nonprofits. That's pretty broad. I think, you know, I'm comfortable targeting the local governments and the local utilities and the local schools, the tribal governments, the state agencies. But when you open it up to the other interested nonprofits, it's far too broad, and I think that should be stricken, and sentence should end with housing authorities, period. And I'm not even sure if housing authorities should be in there.
Other comments? Concerns? Yes, Senator French.
Well, while we're considering Senator Stedman's conceptual amendment, I wonder if anyone has any specific nonprofits that might fall into this category that we're going to strike.
Senator French, through the chair, I threw that language in there, and I was thinking of public health clinics or community health clinics. So I didn't know if there were kind of quasi-governmental entities, and maybe we can simply refine the language. I might ask for further clarification from Senator Stedman about his interest.
We can work on some appropriate language. And not being from a community that, being from Anchorage, which probably wouldn't need something like this, I guess I'm wondering why we wouldn't want to open it up, be more expansive rather than less expansive. But I don't know how this would work conceptually. I mean, would there be some detriment to making this more expansive? And can you think of any?
I'm sorry.
Do you have any comments, Sarah?
Mr. Chairman, the comments that I have with respect to this section is, first, I think one of the things that we would do is develop our fiscal note to kind of tell you how we would approach this. And the authority is, of course, interested in providing the technical assistance that would be necessary to help communities and entities form a fuel co-op. Our efforts may not result in a statewide fuel co-op, though. There may be, there's no barrier right now for groups of organizations to get together now to become a fuel co-op. Several years ago, we changed our bulk fuel revolving loan fund statutes to allow a fuel co-op to borrow funds from the bulk fuel revolving loan fund for such a purpose. And there hasn't, to our knowledge, been any organization except for utility cooperatives that have several sites, several communities that they represent. There hasn't been any type of fuel co-op established that took advantage of that change to our statutes. So it's certainly something that we are more than willing and happy to put an effort forward on advertising and, again, providing the technical assistance. But, again, I'm not certain if there's a lot of economies of scale that would help reduce the price in rural communities. Our understanding is that the cost of the fuel is really, you purchase it at a particular site, and the cost is really the transportation. So a community would pay more further up a river than a community not as far up. So even some larger utility cooperatives haven't had necessarily good luck on buying fuel in bulk and delivering it to several sites.
Do you have a question, comment, Senator French?
Well, I think it's been answered. I just needed a few sentences on how the fuel co-op is envisioned to work and a little bit about how they actually work in real life.
Anything else you need that Ms.
What's the biggest fuel co-op that's been attempted? Would we do better if we had authority to create, an even bigger, I mean, it just seems like you buy in bulk, right? It's the sort of the Walmart approach to life. If you put up a big enough contract and buy in big enough bulk, you get a break on the price.
Through the chair, Senator French, I think I'm not certain. When we had looked at the changes to the bulk fuel revolving loan fund, I'll have to go back and the deputy director who was mainly involved in that is retired now, and so I have to go back and look to see who actually approached us with that. I think it was someone in Northwest Alaska. I'm not certain if they ever did develop a fuel co-op. I don't think they did. If they did, they didn't borrow from the bulk fuel revolving loan fund. But
so we've never done.
As far as I know, I don't know of groups that got together to purchase in bulk. But I guess the one thing to look at it is if you have five communities that are interested in combining to purchase fuel in bulk, the one that has the least expensive transportation costs will all of a sudden have higher costs if you are getting a levelized fuel cost, because you have the most expensive to the least expensive, you're purchasing together to then combine those transportation costs. You may not get the savings that you're looking for, and one community may be subsidizing another community if you're trying to somehow mitigate that transportation cost. But again, there are folks in our agency that have talked to several different communities with respect to people have a desire to look at this. I think having us help facilitate the way this is written is not a bad thing. We'll have to put something on in a fiscal note. We're not funded to do a big outreach to rural communities for this particular purpose. So I just want to make sure that people do understand, though, in the committee that we'll certainly do our best to facilitate this. It may not result in a statewide cooperative. Maybe there will be a situation where there's a cluster of communities that would make sense and wouldn't necessarily, there's 180 communities that we deal with for power cost equalization, for example. All 180 communities may not be in a position to all combine forces to be in the same cooperative.
Thank you. Senator Stedman.
Mr. Chairman, if I heard her correctly, this is not needed. This can be done already. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, yes, entities can come together and form a cooperative. That's my understanding. I can't remember the statute citation. I think it's AS 1015, but that may be the utility.
Well, site. If that's the case, Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering if we shouldn't just strike this section. To fill this up with items that can already be done is just to me a feel good response. And if in the future, we need to tweak our statute to help facilitate some kind of a cooperative when that time comes and they bring it forward, we can take a look at it.
Yeah, Michelle.
Senator Wilikowski, this is Michelle Seidman again. I did want an answer to an earlier question. One of the documents we've looked at when writing this section is a report issued called Cooperative Purchasing, A Way to Save When Buying Fuel for Rural Communities. It's something that was put out years ago by the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, attempted to provide guidance for rural communities interested in doing this. I wanted to note that the purpose of this section is really to ask AEA to go out, to reach out to communities and assess interest in this. While communities can certainly do this on their own right now, we have received calls from communities that have said we could use some help. We heard it in Yuzinki this summer was one of the places, and I received a call from somebody associated with a utility in Kotzebue, talking about a small cooperative they have up there that they were interested in expanding. So I think that there is interest in having some assistance in establishing such a co-op, but I think Ms. Fisher-Goad is correct that despite any best efforts, maybe this would result in a partial cooperative of interested parties or several different regional cooperatives.
Let's go. We're not going to move this bill today, obviously. Let's go back and look at the current language that exists, and I certainly don't want to advance something that we don't need, but let's go back and see if we if the current language does in fact solve, fix the problem, and or if this isn't needed, then we'll certainly take it out. Any other questions, comments? Section 9? Okay, seeing none. Section 10.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, this is Mike Pulowski with Senator McGuire's office. Section 10 is the Emerging Energy Technology Fund, and the substantive changes made to this section from the C version is the transference from the group that Senator Huggins identified on page 6, lines 16. The Alaska Center for Energy and Power was the original administrator of the proposed fund. In the current version, it's the Alaska Energy Authority, moving it away from the Alaska Center for Energy and Power to the Alaska Energy Authority. Further, the Alaska Energy Center for Energy and Power and Institute for Social and Economic Research, what Senator Huggins pointed out on page 6, lines 15 through 19, are the authority is given authority to enter into contracts with these two groups to do the socioeconomic and technical review of the projects that they will be deciding with the advisory committee to fund or not. The advisory committee has been expanded to 7 members on page 6, lines 25 through page 7, line 2. The inclusion on page 6, lines 30 and 31 of the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, Antarctic Energy Office of the National Energy Technology Laboratory. If the committee recalls, the Denali Commission, working with the Alaska Center for Energy and Power, did a trial run of this program using federal funds this last year and has earmarked further funds for if the state decides to go forward with it in the future. These two federal agencies were seen as helpful to the effort, that they brought buy-in from the federal level and offered expertise not necessarily available in the state. However, choosing federal agencies to be appointed by the governor presented some problems. So page 7, lines 6 through 12 were added to the language to provide in case of contingencies, since the state cannot compel federal service employees to serve on boards or commissions, that if these members were not available, it provided a measure of how to, for the governor to make those appointments. Those are the changes to Section 10, Mr. Chairman, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Wagner.
One place there I have a little problem is on line 21, page 6. And it says each member of the committee shall have a degree in science or engineering. I can think of a lot of people that have had a lot of experience in power generation, alternative energy sources, alternative energy, wind energy, thermal, geothermal energy, all kinds of things. We're going to miss a lot of good, qualified, experienced Alaskans if we put a requirement in there like that. So I would suggest we think for a while and after have a degree in science or engineering put in there also, or the equivalent of experience in a related field of energy, and leave some opening there for the governor to be a little creative in his selection.
Point well taken. Other comments? Okay. And of course, you have notes on the Senator Huggins' concerns on Section E, page 6, lines 15 through 19. So we'll try to craft some language there. Anything else on this section? It's Section 11.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, this is Mike with Senator McGuire's office again. Section 11 is a redraft of the transferable tax credit section that was found in C of the previous version. Working with the Department of Revenue, who unfortunately I believe, oh, no, we do have them here. Robin Wilson is here, and I'd ask that she come up.
Ms. Wilson? Welcome to the committee. If you could put yourself on the record.
Yes, thank you. For the record, my name is Robin Wilson. I manage the corporate income tax program for the State Department of Revenue.
And if I may, Mr. Chairman, the substantive changes in the refundable tax credit section, which is mostly Section 12, Section 11 is conforming language. When we looked at the original program working with the Department of Revenue, the idea of a transferable credit posed some problems. A transferable credit, by its nature, has to go through several entities. You have a broker, you have an end purchaser, and since the universe of companies paying corporate income taxes is moderately small in this state, we were worried about the dollar being transferred is the same dollar to the state either direction. So if the policy goal was to deliver and incentivize private spending in renewable energy, keeping that directly to the end, the person building the project, made a lot more sense than having them go out on the market and shop these small credits around the state where brokers and end purchasers would take percentages off of that value. So the section has been redrafted as a simply refundable tax credit. Another major departure from the original version was that while the credit was available at a 15% of the kilowatt hour charged, there was a floor and a ceiling price put on this section of 2.1 cents and 5 cents. Given the varying degree of price of electricity around the state, this really didn't make much sense. So instead of sticking with this floor and ceiling approach, we relied on, you'll see on line 29 through 31 on page 8, the limit is put on the capital expenditure. The important caveat to that capital expenditure, that 10% cap, being on line 31 going to page 9, line 1, that a person may not receive a credit for any state or federal grants they receive for the capital investment. So these are private dollars that a refundable credit is available for. However, since not every member of the public is a taxpaying member, we had to insert on page 8, lines 22 through 28, a procedure for the department to get a refundable credit to someone who might not be required to file an income tax reform. If the committee might remember, this was the reason the bill was modified in the first place to be a transferable tax credit. Just as a policy goal, again, making it a refundable tax credit is easier for the department to administer and delivers the maximum benefit of any subsidy to the people doing the investment. Those are the changes to the section, Mr. Chairman. I might also point out, just for members, on page 13, section 23 sunsets this section, so it's not an ongoing continuous credit in state law.
Which section is that?
That's section 23, page 13, lines 21 and 22.
Questions on section 12, 11, 12, or 23?
Yep.
Yes, Senator Stedman.
Mr. Chairman, it just seems to be a little abstract. I guess when you have to just kind of bear with me, I guess, while we work through this, because we don't really have any projects in front of us, so there's a lot of hypothetical. But a lot of hydros can be $100 million or $350 million. So what kind of impact are we talking about to the Treasury on these projects, and would this type of tax credit incentivize construction that would not otherwise be incentivized anyway? Is this not just, so I guess, Mr. Chairman, show me it's not a giveaway, that it's actually a behavioral inducement to change the direction of somebody.
Yes, Fish.
Senator Stedman, through the chair, it's a very appropriate question and something that we will work to bring numbers back to the committee. In this section, we're very interested in making sure that the mechanics worked. The actual financial impact was something that we were leaving for, I think, higher level decisions at this point. So we'll bring back information to the committee to answer that question for you.
Senator?
If I could,
yes, please. The
10% credit, I guess it's the 15% refundable tax credit and the amount of 15% of the retail rate charge. Can you give us an idea what we're talking about here in dollars? Or, I mean, just our, what are we actually doing here?
Senator Stedman, through the chair, the appropriate cap, the 15% rate, is the mechanic that determines the refundable credit in any given tax year. However, the overall aggregated credits a person could claim under this section is limited to 10% of their capital investment. The sponsor's intent being that incentivizing private dollars as opposed to grant funds is important in encouraging investment in renewable energy infrastructure in the state. That was the goal of this section, was to attract the private dollars. So the fundamental cap is 10% of whatever private contributions are made, ex state or federal grants, to renewable energy projects.
Yes, please follow.
Does that include then leverage, or is it just the equity position?
Senator Stedman, through the chair, my understanding is that it would include leverage, but I would ask Robin Wilson to clarify that for me.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes, through the chair, Senator. Well, my reading of this is that when we're measuring the 10% private capital investment, that it would be excluding any state or federal grants. Now, unfortunately, I'm not familiar with the state's grant program that would be relevant, but if I was to look at this and audit it, I would be trying to ascertain whether a particular contribution was a grant from the state or not.
Yes, please.
As an example, we'll just do a simple one. Say we build a $300 million hydro, and I go out and borrow $200 million and put up $100 million. So would I get 10% of 300 or 10% of 100? Could I not get 10% of 300, which would be $30 million, and I'd have $70 million net in the deal instead of 100?
Through the chair. I'm not certain the intent behind the word grant. A chunk of money coming from the state, I would see that would be a grant program. If it was subsidized interest, I don't know what the intent would be on that.
Yes, please, Senator.
Maybe I misstated. I didn't mean we'd use any financing conduit from the state. It would be just the four of us each put up $25 million, and we went out and borrowed $200 million. Would the credit be $30 million or $10 million?
Through the chair, and again, I can't speak to intent, but my reading of this would be that you would be responsible for that debt, and so you would get the benefit of the full amount. That this phrase about ex state or federal grant would be specifically a grant program in my reading of this, where money comes directly from the federal government or state government as a grant.
Right. Anything else, Senator Seven?
No, well, I think a lot of the energy generation, it's not always nice, a lot of them try to get grants or federal help, but certainly a lot of those are financed directly. Just a case in point, right down here at the last hydro expansion in Juneau. I think a lot of private money was put in that.
Senator French, did you have a question?
Only about the dates on lines 13 to 16 of page 8. July 1, 2009. This bill probably won't go into effect until July 2010. Maybe just get some thoughts about where they came from.
Senator French, through the chair, this is Mike for Senator McGuire's office. These dates were left in this version. This came from an original bill sponsored by Senator McGuire, in which the committee at the time took action to move the dates back to July 1, 2009. The sponsor's intent was to bring those dates back up for committee reconsideration. But since it was an action taken by the committee, we did not feel, as staff, we should change it.
Senator Stedman.
Well, I can assure you that when the bill pops out of its final version, that the dates will be in the future, not in the past.
I'm glad to hear Senator Stedman talking about popping the bill out in the future.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, yes, Senator Stedman's point is very appropriate and something that we will return to the language about to exclude debt and leverage from the calculation of any tax benefit. I believe the sponsor's intent was that it should be on equity. Yeah.
But I think Senator Stedman's raised a the point that, which we've raised in all of these tax credit bills that have come before us, and that is, how do we know this is really going to incentivize? And so, to the extent that you can gather up some information, I know other states do this, perhaps there's some research or data out there that can sort of show us. We all know we want to try to encourage this type of behavior, but does this really work? So to the extent you can gather up some data, that'd be very helpful for us. Anything else on section 12? Okay, section 13.
This is Michelle Seideman, staff to Senator Wilikowski. Senator 13 is a new section in the bill. It directs the Department of Administration to work towards developing a standardized method of collecting and storing energy consumption and cost data. As you'll recall, earlier in the bill, we set out the goal of reducing energy consumption throughout the state 15% by 2020. The idea has been that state government would play a role in that effort and would lead by example. If we don't have a means of measuring our progress, of course, inclusion of this goal is really meaningless. Right now, the Department of Administration and other departments reported to us that there isn't an easy way to measure statewide fuel consumption. So what we said is take 6 months, look at your accounting system, develop a unified approach basically across the state of across state agencies of collecting and storing this data so that 15 years from now we will be able to measure whether we've achieved progress or not. And I believe Mr. Jones, the state procurement officer, may have some comments on this section.
Yes, Vern, please come on up and give us your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, Vern Jones, Chief Procurement Officer. My only comment on this section is that I believe that the Department of Administration is probably not the appropriate agency to do this. DOA manages a total of 15 facilities. DOT probably manages in excess of 1,000, I would guess. And DOT also is the agency that manages the energy performance contracts that we participate in and enjoy savings from. Other candidates, AEA's core business is energy related. It would seem to me that either of these agencies or maybe even OMB would probably be a better choice to coordinate and collect that data, as this sort of a thing is well beyond our core competency. I would also mention that that we have the same issue on section 24, which seems to go along with section 13.
Yes, Michelle.
This is Michelle again. I do want to clarify the reason that we selected Department of Administration for this role is that we really thought that this was an accounting issue. How do various agencies keep track of their energy expenditures? So it really isn't related completely to management of public facilities, but really to any energy expenditure. So that's just ongoing expenditures, and I don't know if Mr. Jones wants to comment on that.
Mr. Jones.
Mr. Chair, I hesitate to speak for the Division of Finance, which controls our accounting system, but my limited knowledge tells me that many of these agencies are not don't use our state accounting system, and I would think that they would probably have as difficult a time as I would in capturing this data and finding a way to collate it and report out on it. So I would still maintain that DOA is probably not the appropriate agency to do something like this. I would think probably, again, Energy Authority, possibly DOT, possibly OMB would be more appropriate candidates for something like this.
Okay. Yes, Senator Stedman.
I kind of hear what he's saying, Mr. Chairman, and I think it's a good intent here to get the data to, you know, so we can analyze the consumption, use the expense data. But We have trouble even finding out how many state employees we have. We have trouble finding out how many automobiles are on the Alaska Marine Highway that are non-rev. I mean, there's some real basic information that we have trouble getting, and this is well beyond basic, and my expectations of the department being able to do something like this isn't very high without a considerable expense to set up a system to do it and employees to do it or to run it.
Other comments? Let's work with the DOA and AEA and DOT and OMB and see who's best appropriate to do this. Section 14.
Senator Wilikowski, this is Michelle Seideman again. Section 14 directs the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities to consider energy efficiency when purchasing new vehicles for the state fleet. I believe they are already doing this, but this bill makes this an explicit statutory requirement. And in the audience, I believe, is Mary Soroki, the ledge liaison for the DOTPF, and she may want to comment on this section.
Mary, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Please put yourself on the record and give us your comments, if you have any.
Through the chair, my name is Mary Soroki, and I'm the special assistant to the commissioner of the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. As we read this language, we don't have any significant problems with it. We consider the phrase "where practicable" to give us the necessary flexibility to be able to do this.
You don't think DOA should be doing this?
On second thought.
Any other questions on section 14? Okay. Section 15.
Michelle Seideman here again with Senator Wilikowski's office. Section 15 makes substantial changes to the old section 16 in our original draft. The original bill required DOT to retrofit all public facilities if retrofitting them would result in net energy savings to the state within 15 years. So it was a fairly broad mandate. This version, we heard back from the department that that was too ambitious of a goal, and that made sense to us. This version requires DOT to retrofit 25% of all public buildings by 2020, starting with those which are least energy efficient. And, of course, this requirement is subject to funding being available. So, again, you'd only retrofit those buildings where you'd see net savings within 15 years. This version also requires DOT to develop a systematic process for determining which buildings should be upgraded to reduce long-term energy costs. And it requires DOT to submit a report to the legislature after consulting with the Department of Administration, detailing the department's progress in meeting this mandate. We've also put a less expansive definition of public facility in there at the department's request. We are only looking at facilities that are larger than 10,000 square feet, which certainly narrows the universe of public facilities. We've also excluded facilities that belong to the legislature or court system because there was concern about the executive branch being able to corral other branches of government. And we have explicitly excluded facilities that are leased to the state, over which we have no control, and for which we would not invest, or in which we would not invest state funds. So I believe, it looks like there's a question on the committee, but I believe we do have Joel St. Aubin still on the line to speak to this section.
Senator Wagner.
First, I was going to say, it doesn't matter which department or which branch of government owns a building. It's a state building, it's a state building. It's like a duck is a duck, you know, walk like that. But I would like to know if we're going to have the DOT, Department of Public Facilities, do this work. I would like a report from them as what their administrative overhead charge would be against this type of work to see if it wouldn't be better for us to go out to private engineering companies to have this work done instead of DOT, because if their administrative overhead is as high for this type of a project as it is for some of the highway projects, we'd be much better off going out with the private industry.
Joel, are you online?
Yes, for the record, this is Joel St. Aubin, Chief of Statewide Public Facilities for DOT.
Did you hear Senator Wagner's question or comment? Any response?
I'd have to work on a fiscal note to this, but for public facilities in general, our overhead does run lower than the highways section. But I would have to examine it in detail to fully respond to Senator Wagner's concerns.
If you could do that, that'd be helpful for us. Any follow-up, Senator Wagner? Senator French, and then Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question about how many facilities would fall into this definition. How many facilities owned and controlled by the state do we have that are more than 10,000 square feet? Does anybody know?
I believe Senator French, through the chair. I did a quick look earlier today, and I came up with approximately 190 buildings.
Thank you.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's similar to the question I was going to ask. Maybe you can elaborate on the age and the location of these buildings. And I'd also like to reinforce what Senator Wagner said. You know, it's broader than just DOT. And I'm also not excited about DOT creating a bureaucracy to do this versus sourcing it out. I'd like to see DOT concentrate on building roads and maintaining our infrastructure. Building new roads, by the way, Mr. Chairman.
Any response, Mr. St. Aubin?
With Senator Stedman through the chair, the age and location of the buildings are from Ketchikan to Kotzebue, and age will vary from built last year to being over 50 years old. There's a wide variety.
Follow-up?
Maybe, Mr. Chairman, we can have them get back to the committee with a spreadsheet on some of that stuff so we can get an idea of it. But and then, you know, take a look at this.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Joel, is that something you can get to us?
Yes, I can.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, Michelle.
Senator Wagoner, through the chair, I don't know if everyone's making the same assumption that we made in this section, but most of this work, or much of it, would likely be done through performance contracting. It would not be done by the department. The other note that I'd like to make is that, of course, the governor has a bill in to create a fund that you'll hear about, if time permits, later on this afternoon, that would take about $18 million in federal stimulus fund and use that to leverage up to $250 million that the governor's requesting permission to issue as bonds. Half of that money, or 60%, would be available for retrofitting public facilities. So we certainly wouldn't include a section like this, unless we thought there was a good possibility of there being funding available for it. So the two are very closely linked.
Okay, section 16.
That looks to be me again. This is Michelle Seidman in Senator Wilikowski's office. Section 16 simply tasks the Alaska Energy Authority and Alaska Housing Finance Corporation with working together to annually plan and conduct a public education campaign to promote energy efficiency and conservation. AEA has, in fact, already begun a public education effort, so this requirement is consistent with their intent. We were told by the legal drafters, however, that they don't have explicit statutory authority for that right now, so it was our intent to provide them with that authority. I would like to note that other jurisdictions that have implemented campaigns to reduce energy consumption have seen significant benefits. As I mentioned earlier, the Anchorage School District recently completed a pilot program to reduce energy costs in 9 Anchorage schools, and they did document a substantial reduction in use of both natural gas and electricity. So we have some homegrown examples of success.
Questions? Section 17.
Mr. Chairman, this is Mike with Senator McGuire's office. I'd take Section 17, 18, 19, and 20 together. This is the resurrection of an old alternative energy revolving loan fund in the Department of Commerce. We should have Greg Winiger from the Division of Investments online to answer questions about this program. It's a reauthorization, and there were no changes from the C version, Mr. Chairman.
Greg, are you there?
Yes, Jim.
No. There he is.
Put yourself on the record. Welcome to the committee again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Greg Winninger, I'm the director of the Division of Investments. Basically, this is a program that was created back in 1987. It operated for about 9 years, and we made close to 3,000 loans. There was about $18 million that was put into the fund. The legislature started taking money out of it in 1987, and they passed some language which basically said as funds came in from loans, those funds reverted back to the general fund. And so essentially this piece of legislation would remove that language. There hasn't been a funding source identified to my knowledge yet, but what this would do would be allow this fund to operate if a funding source discovered for the program.
Yes, Fish.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, we will put in members' packets, but we asked the department to run three scenarios based on different funding levels, and I believe this was net positive to the state over the lifetime of the program, or theoretically would be.
We like that. Any questions? 17, 18, 19, 20? No? Okay.
Yeah.
Section 21. Or did we go section 20? Have we covered that? Section 21. Looks like these are all some repealer. Yes, Senator Wagner.
Fish on line 23 the interest rate may not exceed the maximum of 8%, less than 5%. Is that reasonable at this time? I look at what I'm getting on some of my CDs and things, and I wonder if that's a real good number on either end of that.
Senator Wagner, through the chair, certainly that's something that we might want. I hate to bring Greg back up, but that's something that I would ask him to speak to.
Greg, why don't you come on back up and
sorry about that.
Talk about interest rates.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, again, Greg Winninger, Division of Investments. Senator Wagner, that's a good question. Essentially, when this program operated back in the 80s, the interest rate at that time was 5% for the first $15,000 borrowed and 15% for anything borrowed between $15,000 and $30,000. The program did operate successfully. There was $18 million that went into it. And I might add, too, that most of the loans went out at 5%. Our average loan was around $8,000 or $9,000. And that fund, over that nine-year period, $18 million went into it. About $24 million came out of it. So it actually did cash flow over that time period at a 5% interest rate. I think what the idea here was to provide as low a rate as you could, but at the same time, you want this thing to be successful and revolve over time. And that's kind of where the 5 to 8% range came in. But certainly that could be adjusted.
So something looking a little more risky would be up in the 8% range. Is that what how do you evaluate?
Senator Wagner, through the chair, yeah. Essentially what we would do is it's not based on risk, but essentially it's based on what rates do in the market. It would be prime plus one.
Okay.
With a floor of 5%.
Senator French.
But it sounds like you were encouraging small loans so that you limited the state's risk in any given investment or any given, what was then alternative energy.
Senator French, through the chair, yeah, I think that was the thinking when the legislation was put into effect back in the 80s.
Interesting. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Winger.
Yeah,
all right, next, looks like we're almost to the end. We've got a few repealer language sections, and you could just tell us real quickly what those are repealing.
Mr. Chairman, this is Mike from Senator McGuire's office. I don't have my notes on 21 and 22, but 23 is the Renewable Energy Refundable Tax Credit.
And then we've been over 24.
And Mr. Chairman, if I might, I believe we asked Brian Kane to be around, or he might be online.
Brian, are you there?
To answer those. I'm here, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bryan.
Yeah, Section 21 and 22, which, off, do you know which, what's that repealing?
Mr. Chairman, just one moment here. Let me see if I can, these have been in here for a while. See if I can, I think they're related to the alternative energy loan program. Okay.
That's just the old language we're repealing and putting in new language.
Right, I believe so. I think when we were amending it back in these previous sections that dealt with 4588, it was just to conform some sections, so these needed to be repealed so that the new language that we were putting in would make sense or supersede that.
Okay. And then Section 22?
Mr. Chairman, this is Mike for Senator McGuire's office. This is Section 15 of the bill, which is the retrofits energy efficiency and energy reports section.
Okay.
By 2021.
Oh, okay. Great, 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 great.
To conform with the purposes in Section 1.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Our timelines.
Okay. Section 23 is the renewable energy sunset. 24, we talked about Section 25.
Senator Wilikowski, this is Michelle Seidman. We did speak about this briefly before. This adds a new section to uncodified law that requires DOT to develop a systematic process of prioritizing the retrofitting of state facilities. So that would be part of the mandate to retrofit. And then Section 26 is a new section also. It directs the governor to submit a report to the legislature by next November. That's November 1, 2010. With recommendations about how to structure state energy programs and offices to increase coordination and operating efficiencies. I imagine members of this committee are aware of the fact that on the House side there is a bill to restructure energy programs within the state, and we simply ask the governor to provide recommendations by next year so that we have the benefit of the thinking of the executive branch.
Great. Any questions? Okay, it's 5 o'clock. We've got a couple of amendments. We're not going to get to those today. But I do want to thank you, too. I know you've been working hard. And I want to thank the administration officials who are here. I really appreciate everyone coming out and sitting through this, and your input has been really invaluable. And so we'll continue to work on this. It's a work in progress, but I think we've made some good progress today. And with that, we are adjourned.